Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today for another edition of Garden Talk. And we're going to be visiting with Diana Alfeth today, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Pierce County. She also teaches landscape design at UW River Falls. Always great to have. She's coming from our Eau Claire studios. And so it's wonderful to have you with us, Diana.
Hi, Larry. Thanks. It's great to be here again.
Well, you know what? This was a long fall. I mean, things have undergone a drastic change here, or drastic changes are coming, of course, as they often do on the opening weekend of the gun deer season. But we had a long fall in the garden.
And nobody's complaining, are they?
No.
You know, it's been great having this warm weather. It's been above average, and most of us are closer to being prepared for winter than usual because we've had all that time out there. But it's kind of goofed up some of our plants. Some of our spring flowering shrubs decided to start flowering, and tulips and garlic and spring bulbs have decided to start sprouting. And so there's a lot of weird things going on out there that people have been reporting.
Yeah, and you know, the potted plants I had outside, flowering plants, they're still flowering.
Yeah, we have some of that too. And usually, you know, you have the containers put away in the shed by now, and here they're in full bloom, so you can't quite do that.
I know it. I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. You may have questions, or maybe you've got a story to tell about your garden. Love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Speaking of Facebook, we had a comment from Marilyn. She has a photo on the Facebook page, too. She says, I live near Superior. I had four Brussels sprouts plants and had to pull them yesterday because of the cold snap. The warm fall allowed them to grow really big. And I bet you she's got a photo, and I've got to go to the website and take a look here. But there were some pretty good Brussels sprouts this year.
Brussels sprouts had a fabulous year, and for those people who, you know, had reported that they were really small, you have to remember, you have to, partway through the growing season, you have to pinch off the top of your plant, and then that will cause the sprouts to swell bigger and become bigger. It's just like when you pinch, the end of a tip of ivy plant, and it causes it to branch, and it sends the hormones of the plant down to those sprouts, and it causes them to swell bigger. But they did have a great year. They had a long growing year, and they are better after we've had a few light frosts because that kind of improves the flavor and sweetens them up. And we didn't have a lot of frost early on, so it's finally getting cold enough up here. We have ice on the puddles right now, and it's finally getting cold, but we did have a long season for those Brussels sprouts to really fill out and get nice and tasty.
Man, I just went online to our Facebook page to take a look at Marilyn's picture, and she is a lovely shot of her Brussels sprout plant. And man, she had the Brussels sprouts there. They look wonderful. And it reminded me again as I looked at it, you know, when you harvest those, you start at the bottom and kind of work your way up, don't you?
You do, and that's one thing that, you know, those first ones that you harvest, it hasn't frosted yet, so they aren't always as tasty, but if you leave them go too long, then they're going to start getting less firm and leafier and that kind of thing. So you do want to harvest them as they become ready throughout the fall, and then the last ones will be being harvested now when it's getting really, really cold, and it's actually going to freeze them solid, and then that's going to ruin the texture.
There it goes, yeah. Karen sent us a note on Facebook and said, I harvested broccoli yesterday out of my garden.
Oh, good for her. So she must have done a fall planting, usually in August. We don't always think about that being the time to go ahead and plant some fall harvest, cool season crops like broccoli and cauliflower and spinach and those kinds of things. But she must have done that, and that's really a good idea because they can handle some frost as well, just like the Brussels sprouts, and it's a great way to extend your garden season.
Still have three tomatoes.
You
from
do?
My garden sitting on my, yeah. They've got to be eaten this weekend though.
Oh wow, that's great that you have them this long yet, because for most of us the tomato season has been over for a while.
Well, they've been sitting in, you know, they've been turning from green to red is what they've been doing. So they're not the tastiest, but hey, it's fun to be able to say that. Past mid-November, you're still eating a tomato or two from your garden.
That is very unusual. And what a treat. What a treat to not have to be buying them from the store yet.
Paul in Wausau has a question. Hi, Paul. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking the call. I have some garlic that I'd like to put in the ground, and I'm wondering if I lucked out by procrastinating, and this is a good time to put those bulbs in. And then I also have another question after that.
Where do you live?
Wausau.
Okay. So with spring bulbs, and garlic kind of goes right in there with daffodils and tulips, the best time to plant them is probably in October, but you probably still can plant them just fine. The soil up here in the northern half anyway is getting a little frosted now in the last couple of days, but 4 inches down where you're going to be planting the bulbs, it's still not frozen, and it's still relatively warm. So if you put those bulbs in there, those garlic bulbs in there, they should do a little bit of root growth yet this fall and then take off in spring. So I definitely would go ahead and put them in. You may not get quite as much vigor as if you would have planted them a month ago and they'd have had that much more root growth this fall yet, but you'll probably still have a successful harvest.
Outstanding. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Had a friend on Facebook say, oh, my husband quick ran out and healed in and dug in the bulbs, flower bulbs, the tulip bulbs, I think, just yesterday. So.
Oh, that's really good because I have 3 bags of them in my garage waiting to go in yet this weekend. So
that can still happen.
It can. You know, I have, I shouldn't admit this, you know, because I am a horticulturist and I should know better, but I have actually chunked through 3 inches of frozen soil and stuck tulip bulbs in, and they bloom the next year. I don't recommend it, but, you know, you have no choice at this point because you can't save the bulbs until spring. So you may as well give it a try and put them in, and they do amazingly well.
Talking today with Diana Althoff, a horticulture educator for UW Extension in Pierce County. It's always great to have her along. She talks about landscape design and teaches it at UW River Falls. So maybe if you've got a landscape design question, she'll take a crack at that as well. But maybe you have a comment about your garden this fall or what went on in the garden. Maybe you've got a houseplant question. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. Necessary chores, a couple days ago, I got the sort of the work done around the garden and the garden tools, pretty much cleaned them off and got them cleaned up and so I feel like I'm about done.
That's good. That's good. There's always, you know, one thing that the snow flies and you go, oh, I forgot to do that. But things to remember are, you know, if you have a rain barrel, it should be emptied and dumped over so that it doesn't have the water in it freeze and crack the barrel over the winter. The same with containers. If you have containers outside, the moisture in the potting mix in them will expand when it freezes, and that can crack the container. So if you can, you don't necessarily have to empty them out if the soil was put in just this year, you can reuse that soil for a couple of years. But if you can put them in a garage or a shed or something so that they aren't getting all that moisture in them, that would help. Garden ornaments are usually best put inside for that same reason, so they don't have the moisture and the freezing and thawing stuff that goes on when the sun comes out, as well as the UV rays hitting them all winter. So a lot of garden ornaments, it's a good thing to bring those in over winter. And like I said, we've had this warm fall, so many of us are kind of ahead of the game and not scrambling at the last minute for those tasks this year.
Yeah, which is a good thing. Cassandra in La Crosse, thank you for joining us. What's on your mind?
Oh, hello, Larry. Okay, so my question is, I have this rose bush that for the last 2 years, I moved it this year, so the two previous years was in between some bigger flowers and wasn't doing very well. So this spring, I decided to move it because I was afraid that it was going to die over the summer if it stayed there another year. And it, while moving it, I think I didn't grab all of the root system, and it took a very long time to come back to life. Now it has, and it's doing quite well, but like it's still growing new leaves. When should I prune that? Like, when should I cut it down? Like, I've been afraid to do it so far.
Yeah, and I'm, do you know, is it like a shrub rose, or is it?
The types of stalks that are out, they are very long and tall, and there's lots of leaves on them. I don't know what kind of rose bush it is. It was planted there before I moved there.
Okay. The first year after you transplant something, you always leave the majority of the roots behind, no matter how big of a soil ball you dig when you transplant a shrub. So it's going to take a couple of years before it's totally reestablished and doing its best. So if it's still growing, that's partly, you know, I have roses that are blooming too, still.
Yeah.
Now they kind of freeze dried out there, but they're in full bloom. And that was partly the goofy fall weather because they weren't being triggered to really go dormant. So if it were me with your rose, I would wait until spring to prune it. And the reason for that is that because the plant hasn't gone dormant yet, it may still be active where it's sending the energy that's in those stems and in those leaves down to the roots to store for winter. So if you prune them off now, you're pruning away some of that energy. So over the next, you know, we'll be, yes, it's getting colder, but it'll still be above freezing during the days, and some of that movement still continues all the way, even in a normal year, into December before the plants are totally dormant. And that's why we usually recommend that you plant prune shrubs in March versus now, because that stuff is still going down and storing for winter, and you want all of that you can get, being that you did transplant it and you have a compromised root system and the plant is still trying to get reestablished. So if you just leave it for the winter, and then in spring, you'll be able to tell what made it through winter. We still don't know what our winter is going to be. If it's a really cold winter, we might have a lot of dieback. If it turns out to be a really warmer than normal winter, like some of the predictions are, because El Niño, what are they calling it? The Godzilla El Niño coming in here and stuff is supposed to give us a warmer than normal winter. Then you might get a lot of the buds that are way above ground survive. So if it were me, I would just leave it until spring, until stuff starts budding out, and then prune away anything that's dead.
Okay, and then like with hosta plants and all that stuff, should I also wait until next year? Should I just like leave my flower beds and
that's a little
deal
bit
with it all?
Yeah, that's a little bit different, and really you can leave stuff till spring, so you can leave winter interest if you have flower heads sticking up. Birds and stuff will feed on that over the winter, so it's a great way to provide some food for the birds over winter, as well as something to look at out your window in the winter. But things like hosta that just kind of flatten down and that kind of thing, you can clean that up anytime. So that's those leaves have frozen, and they have a big root system, and so you can clean all of that stuff up now. it's kind of one of those things that it's whenever you have time. I know I have a lot less time in spring in my schedule every year than I do in fall, so I try to get a lot of it cleaned up in fall, even though I sacrifice some of that winter interest. But it's either way, you can do that.
All right. Thanks, Cassandra.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Diana Alfeth, our guest today, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Pierce County. I'm Larry Mueller. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer today for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next week on Garden Talk, we'll be joined by Neil DeBole from the Prairie Nursery. He's going to talk about prairie management in fall. And I know Joy Cardine, who's going to be the special guest interviewer from Morning Drive, is going to be hosting. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And Neil always does a great job. And somebody else who does a great job on the air is Diana Alfeth, who's with us right now and can answer your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Love to have her with us, and certainly, again, join in with your own questions or comments. Jean and Cataract up next with a question. Hi, Jean. Thank you for calling.
Hi, guys. I have a question relating to garlic and then a comment about the late growing season.
Okay.
I harvested my garlic in July like you normally would, and then I noticed this fall there's all kinds of garlic sprouts came up, so I obviously must have missed some. And one day when I was weeding, I ended up with a little handful of little tiny baby garlic cloves, so I just shoved them all back in the earth. So now I have, the green part, you know, tops of the garlic have to be maybe 8, 9, 10 inches tall.
Oh.
And is it okay to mulch on top of that soon? You know, I don't know. They're probably kind of wet and moist. I don't want anything to rot in there, but I don't know what else to do with all those tops. I just assume leave them till spring and let them get big, you know, in the summer like they're supposed to.
Yeah, and that is one of the things that has happened with this warm fall is bulbs have sprouted, the garlic has sprouted, it's really grown up there. And in the end, that's really not going to hurt the plants any. Some of the things like the shrubs that are, you know, we've had lilacs blooming in October this year. And so you might have a few less flowers on those kinds of things next spring. But with the garlic and any of the bulbs, they will slowly kind of go back dormant. So what you should do is wait until you have an inch or two of frost in the soil. And I don't know where you live. Cataract, was it? I'm not sure where that...
It's on the west side of the state between Sparta and Black River Falls. So
okay.
About 40 miles northeast of La Crosse.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So in the next week or two, we should be getting frost in the ground, and you want to wait until there's about 2 inches of frost and then do the mulching. So the mulching, and this is with perennials or strawberries or the bulbs, any of these things, the mulching is not to keep things warm, it's to keep them frozen. So we want to wait until things are frozen, just like you said, because if you cover them now before things have frost in them, they'll rot underneath that mulch, and it can also be a really nice environment for diseases like fungus that if you keep things warm longer by mulching when the soil's not frozen yet, and rodents as well. So if you wait until there's some frost in the ground and then put the mulch on, those green sprouts that are up right now, they'll basically be frozen under there, so they won't just rot and turn slimy and all of that sort of a thing. And then in spring, just as normal as can be, they'll shoot up new shoots, just like they would otherwise. So just, you know, hold off a little bit yet until we get some frost in the ground, and then put your mulch over it, and everything should be fine.
There we go, Jean. Thanks a lot for calling.
Well, yep. I do have to real quickly, though, tell you what I did a couple days ago. I actually made tabbouleh with fresh mint and fresh parsley from my garden. That's like a July thing, but they were so healthy and so bright and so green. I'm like, well, what the heck? I've got nothing to lose, and it's delicious.
did you notice any difference in flavor because of them being growing in less light and a little bit cooler temperatures?
You know what? You would think that would be the case, and we're predicted to have, like, teens at night next week. I mean, it gets pretty cold up here and whatever, but you know what? They seem to me to be as full of flavor as ever can be. And the day I harvested them, it wasn't exactly, the weather wasn't exactly the best. You know, it was windier than heck and cold than that, but I'm like, well, this will be my last chance, so.
There you go.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, that is wonderful.
That's expanding our summer. And, you know, the way I look at it right now, it's like every day is one day closer to spring. So our winter is going to be shorter this year just because, but she's harvesting in November.
Well, you know, thanks very much, Jean, for calling. Helen emailed us from Manitowoc, says, I've been picking raspberries from my south-facing hill as late as 2 days ago.
Wow.
There are still lots of green ones out there, and I doubt if I can pick more, but a few of the plants bloomed and gave me raspberries this spring, but I think these are all plants that should be bearing next summer. Daughter Emily, we got out of the car a couple days ago as well, probably I think 3 days ago, and she said, look here, Dad, and there were raspberries. We ate some raspberries right off the plant.
That kind of goofs up the traditional Thanksgiving meals now when you can have fresh raspberries for Thanksgiving.
Well, they're long gone, I can tell you that. We ate them up right away. Oh, boy. It's kind of fun. Kind of fun. Bob, you worry a little bit about the climate and everything, but in the meantime, it's certainly fun to find raspberries in the middle of November.
I guess this must be what it's like to live in, Missouri or something?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's it. Bob in Lancaster has a question, so let's go there. Bob, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Calling to ask between the balance between water drainage and tree roots, causing concrete pads to sink and tilt. I've got a couple concrete pads in back and 5 foot by 5 foot by 3 inches, and there's a couple Norway maples nearby, and I just wondered, could the roots be going in and removing the moisture?
Especially Norway maple, they run pretty shallow roots, don't they, Diana?
Yeah, those are some that you often see the roots up on the ground underneath the trees. What can happen is the roots, there's a lot of different things that can be going on. As the root grows, they normally don't like to grow too much right under cement because there's no moisture there and there's usually crummy soil, you know, it's usually gravel and that kind of a thing. But they will grow underneath them, at least along the edges and that kind of a thing. And, of course, just like the tree trunk gets fatter every year as it puts on growth, the roots do the same thing. So if you get a root growing underneath a slab, it grows a little bit each year, and that can push up on the slab, and that can tilt it. So it can raise it in one part, which causes it to sink in another part. The other thing that can happen is we're not usually too worried that it's taking moisture out and therefore causing it to sink, but sometimes roots will die off. You might have a root that dies off because of who knows what, and then as it decomposes, that void, that space that it was filling, sinks, and that can cause things to sink. So roots near patios definitely can cause problems. There's no two ways about it. How you prevent that is kind of hard to say unless you know, when you built the slab, you put something down, you know, vertically into the soil so that the roots couldn't push through it or something like that. But maples are a problem with that. They do have extensive root systems, and about all you can do once it happens is to go in and, you know, replace those slabs or
you can mud jack them sometimes if they're not cracked, if they're just heaved.
Yeah, if they've settled in one spot, they can kind of drill through and they squish mud underneath it to raise that low part up. So if there's not a part that's too high to balance that out, that's a better fix than ripping the whole thing out and starting over. But the roots definitely can have, you know, for various reasons, they can definitely cause havoc on patios.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks, Bob, for calling. Appreciate it. Dwayne and Weston, your turn. Hi, Dwayne.
Oh, hey, good morning. I've got like spireas, like 6 bushes on the side of my house that were there when we moved in, and I trim them, you know, keep them in hand. But can you? There's a lot of dead older wood and deep in, you know, in the middle of plant. Can you rejuvenate those right at the base ever? I mean, now you're going to start over, but.
Yeah.
And then lilac, oh, you can rejuvenate spireas?
Yeah, with the spirea, I'm assuming there's different kinds of spirea, but I'm assuming you're talking about, yeah, okay, so the Bimalda type that have the flat top flowers on them. You can prune those down, just give them a really harsh haircut to about 4 inches tall.
Just
shear them right off. They are very popular shrubs for a reason. They are so resilient, and they can take that where you can just shear them off to about 4 inches. Normally, we say every winter, if you shear them to about 8 inches, they bloom on new wood, so they'll get new shoots from those stems that are left and from the roots, and they come up, and they're blooming in June, and they're beautiful, and they're thicker, and they aren't as lanky. So you can do that. Now, or you can do it in March. Usually we say in March because that's the best time to prune things, but because you're pruning so low on these, if we end up with a foot of snow, it'll be hard to get at them in March. So you could do that now, and it's not going to kill the shrubs.
There we go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call.
Did you have a question on lilacs too?
Oh, yeah. Was there?
When can you prune lilacs?
When to prune?
Mine are getting so tall, and they're coming out into the yard. I just basically want to get them so I can run the mower along them. They're coming way out. Not as much the height I don't care about, but the coming out from the bottom, you know.
Mm-hmm. So the best time to prune lilacs is right after they flower, and that's going to be in June probably. And the reason for that is because they form their flower buds during the summer after they're done flowering. So if you prune right now, you're pruning away flower buds that have already formed. So you're going to have less flowers next year. Now, that probably isn't that important to you because you're trying to reclaim some yard. So you can prune them in March, just like any other shrubs, if you don't care about the year's flowers. And with lilacs, because they do tend to spread and they tend to get pretty tall, and they'll get to where they're kind of old, and then on that older wood, they don't bloom as much. So you'll start losing flowers, and you'll start having leaves at the top, and you'll just see all the stems in the bottom. So with lilacs or any other of these multi-cane or multi-trunked shrubs that shoot up from the base, the best thing to do is to go in there and if you're in a rejuvenation process, count how many stems are coming up from the bottom and divide that by 4 and cut away at ground level 25% or 1/4 1/4 of all of the biggest stems. And what that's going to cause is for new younger shoots to sprout up from the base. And those are the ones that are going to grow up and be flowering well in the next couple of years. And when you do that, it effectively, if you do that every year, you basically rejuvenate your entire shrub in 4 years. And then you're going to have a smaller shrub, and any little ones that start sprouting out in the yard where it's interfering with your mowing, you can nip those out of there and kind of get that shrub back under control. So it sounds like yours has kind of gotten out of control a little bit. Mm-hmm. And with this rejuvenation pruning, you can make that whole shrub smaller and more manageable and healthier in the long run by doing that.
Look a lot better. They look a lot better after you go through that.
What you don't want to do, and we see this happen, is go in there and cut the branches off like halfway, and then you kind of have a trunk sticking up 2 feet up, and it really looks crummy in winter.
Whack it off right at the base.
Yes.
Duane, there you go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. An email question from James wonders, is it too late to separate iris rhizomes?
I would say yes. Iris, the best time is in July, and the reason for that is they need several months of warm soil to get reestablished. So iris aren't like a spring bulb like I talked about, you know, chopping through frozen soil and putting them in. They really need to have some root growth and get established afterwards. So it would be a little iffy. Now, if you had iris and you absolutely, it was, they die or you separate them now, I'd go ahead and give it a try, but they are more likely to have problems being that the soil is getting cooler now. And if you did try it, I would be sure to mulch over them well after the ground starts to freeze, because we don't want that freezing and thawing happening, and that heaves things up out of the ground, and an iris rhizome would be a prime candidate for heaving, being pushed out of the ground by frost and then ending up on the top of the soil. So probably, you know, probably too late, but if you have no other choice,
yeah,
go ahead.
Go ahead. Ross in Door County, hi, thanks for calling.
Hey, thank you very much for the opportunity. I do live in Door County. It's a glorious day up here today, and I was looking at my raspberry bushes as you guys were talking earlier about raspberries, and I'm still finding them.
Good
and
for
I'm
you.
I'm wondering when to cut them back. I planted four ever-bearing raspberry bushes in a raised bed in the spring, and I've had some pretty good yields, and I'm just wondering, when do I cut them back?
Well, so raspberries, there's the ever-bearing or the summer-bearing and the fall-bearing kinds. And what raspberries do is every cane lives for 2 years. So when it sprouts up out of the root system, the it'll grow, you know, a few feet up, and that's a primal cane. And then the next year, basically in a ever-bearing or summer-bearing, it will put on more growth, and that becomes a floricane. It flowers, it produces the berries, and then that cane will die. So if it's a cane that you actually harvested on this year, then you can prune that back to the ground. You can do that now, or you can do it in the spring, because it's going to be dead. If you want to manage them as fall bearing, and you can, whether you have fall bearings or whether you have the ever bearing or summer bearing, and you want to manage them as fall bearing, then what you can do is just like at this time of year, you can just mow them right on off to the ground, and it's a lot easier than going in there and pruning out individual canes, because you have to be really armored up to do that, because that's where you get scratches all over everything. But if you manage them as fall bearing, then what happens is you can mow them all off right now, and in spring they will start shooting up, and you won't get berries as early in the season, but those canes will turn into floricanes by fall and be putting on a really big production later in the season. So it's kind of up to you how you want to manage them, but the bottom line for yours is when to do it. You can be doing that now because and getting them ready for winter.
There you go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call, Ross. Good luck. Appreciate it. And I wonder what Dot is on Dot's mind from Chippewa Falls. Hi, Dot. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I have a question for you.
Sure.
I have a Hoya rope plant.
Okay.
Are you familiar with what that is?
Is that a house plant?
Yeah.
Okay. And it kind of has waxy kind of leaves?
Yeah, it's real different looking.
Okay. I think I know which one you're talking about then.
Really different looking. Kind of one of a kind.
Okay.
Yeah. First of all, I need to know how to, it's getting very, very long, but I want to cut some off and start another plant, but I want to know just how you do that.
Okay. And you're right. They do kind of get long and viney and that kind of a thing. So what you can do, now is this the one that has the really curly leaves?
Yeah.
Yep, they're all kind of gnarly. Yeah, they are really funky-looking plants. So what you can do is cut off a bunch a length of that vine or that long arm, and then you'll be able to kind of... there's two ways you can do it. You can actually just stick that into moist soil, the end of it, that where you cut it off, and if you keep that soil moist, not wet, but slightly damp, it may root very easily for you that way. The other thing that you can try doing, and what I've done with Hoyas in the past, there are some other ones that aren't all, that don't have all the curly leaves and stuff. You can just strip some of those leaves off the stem so you have a little bit of a a bare stem there and put it in water, just a glass of water. And you just take a glass of water, put a piece of tin foil over it, take a pencil and poke a few holes in the tin foil, and then stick that stem through there so that the base of the stem is in the water. And the tin foil will hold it up so that the whole thing doesn't, you know, sink into the water and stuff. And after, I don't know, maybe a month or so, you'll see roots starting to form on that. And then you can just pot it up into a new container and you'll have a new plant growing.
Okay, but my main question is, where do I cut it? I don't know exactly where you cut it when I cut it.
You cut it to the point where you want the existing plant to be. So if you've got a 3-foot long branch or stem that's going down there and you want it to be a foot long, that's where you can cut it, and then you can cut them into smaller pieces so you can try multiple ones. If you have about 6-inch sections that you're trying to root, that would be perfect.
There you go.
I mean, whereabouts exactly do you cut it at?
At a leaf.
Does it really matter?
Nope, just wherever you get the scissors or the knife in there and cut. That's not really that important. What will happen is where you cut it, the next buds back towards the base of the plant will sprout and start growing. So then that will branch and you'll get a fuller plant. And that little, where you cut it, that will just heal over.
There we go. Good luck. Thanks, Dot, for calling. Appreciate your call. And Fred in Menominee Falls, thank you for calling. Hi. Fred, are you there?
I'm here.
What's on your mind?
Well, we moved into a place, and I got these two red barberries that are huge, and nobody ever cleaned them up. There are tons of leaves and debris down toward the base, and I can't get at it because obviously they're barberries. I want to know if I can rejuvenate pruning those things.
First, we should look at the fact that barberries have been placed on the invasive species list. And so the best thing is probably for you to cut them down and replace them with something else. If you choose not to do that, they can be rejuvenated some, but they're not as vigorous at it as things like spirea or dogwoods or lilacs are. So what you can do, and yes, they're barberries, and again, you have to armor up really, really good to get in there and prune those back, but you can look at the biggest, fattest stems that are kind of look old. They're probably not going to be blooming very well, and they're going to be the longest, ugliest looking things. If you prune those all the way back to the base, okay, and then leave some of the smaller shoots that are growing around there, that will effectively shorten and rejuvenate the shrub to get started. It, usually when you're rejuvenating a shrub that's pretty overgrown, it's a multi-year process. It's hard to do it all at once. The rule of thumb is that you should never cut away more than a third of the plant at one time, because that would be taking away too many leaves. And of course, that's what does the photosynthesis and provides the food for the plants. So you are stressing it too much if you cut away more than a third or a fourth of the plant at one time. So if you get in there and you whack away the biggest, fattest, oldest looking stuff at the base, and then you can, you know, nip off some ends of the shrub, of the other branches and stuff if you need to shape it a little bit. And then the next year you can go in there and do kind of the same thing. You will rejuvenate it. But it's, again, barberries aren't quite as vigorous growing as far as getting new shoots and stuff go as some other shrubs, but it can work.
I'd consider getting rid of it, though.
Barberries were very, very popular. They can be beautiful shrubs, but quite honestly, we've had a lot of problems over the years that they get winter dieback pretty easily, and so we see a lot of not so great looking barberries out there anyway, and they do produce seeds, and those seeds have been found to be sprouting and becoming invasive. So it's been, most of the barberries have been put on some invasive species lists here, and they're just not recommended to be planted anymore.
Diana Alfeth, our guest today, horticulture educator for the UW Extension in Pierce County. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you so much for joining us for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest Diana Alfeth, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Pierce County. Join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. You can also post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show or email us at talk@wpr.org. And Helen in West Salem has a comment, so let's go to Helen. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I was just interested in the call about the barberry.
Yeah.
Because I've had three barberry plants for 58 years, and I like them. They're tough. And what I liked about them, if they get too big, I simply cut them off at the ground, and they come back. I do that in June. They come back, and they're just a beautiful shrub. And so to me, they're really easy. And you can keep it the size you want, and they're tough. They survive winter and everything. And I have two at the base of an evergreen arborvita, mm-hmm. and they kind of set that off. Anyway, I just think you don't have to worry about how you trim them, because they come right back, and they don't spread. They stay right where they are. So maybe there's different kinds out there.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that is a really, really good point there. And yours being so old, they're probably one of the originals that have been around. There have been a lot of cultivars that come in different sizes and shapes and colors. And I have one it only gets about a foot high, and it just looks like this little ball, and it's the darkest, darkest purple. It doesn't get seeds. It doesn't flower. It doesn't do anything. And I forgot what it's actually called, but it's really nice, and it does well. But it also depends on some of these varieties, if they have protection like from winter winds, because if they're really exposed to winter winds, that dries them out, and that's what causes some of the die back. And some of them are more vigorous than others. So that's great that you've had such good success with yours. And not all of them do that well, but it's great that yours has worked out that well.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot for calling, Helen. Appreciate it. I want to give Sue in Oconomowoc a chance to join us, and she's joining us through Facebook. She says, I let my garden sit this year, so it's overgrown with weeds. I'm thinking of covering the entire area with black plastic to kill all the seeds and weeds so I can start over next year. If that will work, should I do this now or wait till spring?
The thing with black plastic is we're trying to smother the weeds, and it can be effective, but it takes a chunk of time. So doing it now when everything is pretty much dormant anyway isn't going to be that effective, because what we're trying to do when we cover things with black plastic is block out the light so that they get starved out. And since they're dormant anyway over winter, they're not active, so it doesn't work over the winter time. So you'd have to do it in spring, but then it also has to be on there for, oh gosh, probably at least a month, depending on what kinds of weeds you have. So that's going to affect your planting season, because you're going to want to be planting in there before your weeds are dead. So unless it's an area that you're willing to forfeit from planting next year, the black plastic's going to be a little challenging to do. So it kind of depends on what kind of weeds they are. If they were annual weeds that grew in there this year, then it's not such a big deal, because that will all be dyed back after, mm-hmm. Come spring, and you can work up the soil and you can plant again. If you have perennial weeds in there like quackgrass, the black plastic thing is going to take 3 weeks to kill that stuff, or 3 months to kill that stuff, because quackgrass has such an extensive root system and so many reserves in there that it really takes a long time to smother that out. So the answer is you may as well wait till spring at this point, because things have gone dormant, but you really have to evaluate if that's the best way to go about it, because it's going to take a length of time to smother and shade out perennial weeds that are in there.
May want to instead, you know, plant your garden, then do a lot of mulching in the garden to sort of keep those weeds away if you really want a garden.
Yep, and in the spring, if you just, you know, work up the soil, till up the soil, that will kind of beat up things that are already there. You'll always have weed seeds. You'll always have weeds. There's just no way around it. But then, like Larry said, if you then plant your garden and then put a good 6 inches of straw or chopped leaves or newspaper with grass clippings on top of it in your garden, that will stop weed seeds from germinating, and it'll really make your maintenance a whole lot easier. And at the same time, it retains moisture and gives you something other than mud to walk on when it's damp out and stuff. So you're going to have weeds no matter what. But if you've gotten, you know, if you've gotten a lot of perennial weeds in there like quackgrass, that is a problem. But the black plastic method just takes a long time to be effective.
Cheryl in Conover has a question. Let's go to Cheryl. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, how are you today? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
My son in Wauwatosa, where his house is, had this beautiful plant. And we took a picking off of it, and we looked it up, and we found it was a Datura plant. Now, when he purchased the house, it was obvious that the people that owned the house had the gardens professionally done with all white flowers. Well, as I looked up the Datura plant, D-A-T-U-R-A, I got a little concerned because I'm not sure which version I have. I know I have the one that has darker green leaves, and I transplanted it up north here in Conover to see if it would come in spring because it was just beautiful. I mean, it took up his whole side of his driveway. So I just want some ideas about, did I do the right thing or should I throw it away?
You know, if we had a sample of it when it's growing next year, if you were able to get one into an extension office or send us some good pictures and stuff, we could probably identify exactly which one it is. But Datura is a member of the nightshade family, and it is a toxic plant, and that's the biggest problem with it. They are poisonous plants, so you have to be sure that, you know, no animal. No animal or no child or no person who can be affected by it is going to get access to it in the wrong way. They're called like angel trumpets or moonflowers. They get big, beautiful white flowers, and they grow wild as weeds, versions of them, different species of them, all over Wisconsin. So the biggest thing to watch for if I were you is to make sure that it's not spreading by seed because you don't want it to become an invasive issue. And otherwise, as long as you're sure that nobody eats it, it can be a nice landscape plant. And as I said, when it's in bloom and in growth next year, if you want to explore exactly which species it is, we can always help with that. But
there you go.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I transplanted it because I put it around our outside fence up here thinking, now, we do have dogs and animals, but it's on the outside of the fence, and there are only deer and bears and squirrels and raccoons there, so
they're going to leave it alone.
Up in the woods, they're going to leave it alone. Animals like that know when it's poisonous. They're smarter than we are, I think.
There you go, Cheryl. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call, and you can join in too. 800-642-1234. Lynn and Racine has a question. Hi, Lynn. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you. I have two retaining walls, and in between the two retaining walls is a flower bed. And someone before me planted what I think is a sumac bush or sumac tree, which when I first bought the place a couple years ago was small and pretty and turned beautiful colors and has these little red cones on in the fall. but now is 6 or 8 feet tall and has enormous shoots that just pop up everywhere. And I'm concerned about the integrity of my retaining walls. I don't know. I mean, I get a lot of these shoots, and I get a lot of things that could turn into a plant equally as large as the one that's there now.
So you want to get rid of the whole plant?
I don't know.
What do you think? Lynn, let's turn to Diana and see what she's got to say.
So does this particular sumac have kind of lighter green leaves?
Yes.
Okay, so it's probably tiger eyes. That's the very popular ornamental sumac that's been planted a lot lately. And it will do that. Sumacs do spread from the root system. And the shrub will get kind of bigger. Is the height a problem for you, or are you okay with the height so far?
The height and the width. So I've been cutting it back a little bit. I've cut back a couple of the really big shoots that have turned into their own little bush.
And yeah.
Yeah, right.
So,
and that's really, if you don't mind the plant being there, keeping it cut back to keep it smaller in size is okay. And every time that you prune back, it will get a little bushier, that kind of a thing. But you can kind of keep it in bounds if you're pruning regularly. But it will keep shooting up those root shoots, and it would fill in that whole area eventually if you let it. So if you're very diligent that every time one of those shoots pops up that you prune it off, that will kind of knock it back a little bit. And if you let any of those shoots grow, then that's going to lead to more shoots and more shoots and more shoots. And then I'd really be worried about the integrity of your retaining wall.
There you go. Oh, man. Diana Off is our guest today. Diana is a horticulture educator for the University of Wisconsin Extension in Pierce County. She also teaches landscape design at UW River Falls. Our guest for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. We have a great group of horticulture educators working for UW Extension throughout the state. Several of them spend time with us on Garden Talk a few times a year. Larry Mueller here, and one of those folks who does a marvelous job and comes by fairly often, Diana Alfeth, with us. Diana is the horticulture educator for UW Extension in Pierce County. She also teaches landscape design at UW River Falls. And Diana, thanks again for spending time with us today.
It's always fun to be here on the show.
Well, I love having you. And Paul in Kenosha has a question for you. So I'm going to go right to the phones and to Paul, and let's see what's on his mind. Hi, Paul.
Hello. I listened to a program where there was a lot of discussion on Garden Talk about cardoon. Mm-hmm. And I bought some seeds and I planted them, and they grew into kind of a floret of leaves, no blooms or anything like that. Anyway, I'm wondering what to do with that cardoon. How do people eat it? Is there? It had been compared to artichokes in the discussion on the radio, mm-hmm. and I boiled up some of the stems and ribs of the leaves. I didn't find it very good, actually. Mm-hmm. But I might not have prepared it, or maybe I'm waiting for some kind of a blossom or a seed stalk in the center or something like that. I don't really know what I should expect here and how I should prepare it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great question. I have not ever grown cardoon, but it is kind of like a thistle artichoke kind of a thing. It's kind of spiny a little bit, I think. Mm-hmm. And what I do know is that it's the innermost, the center stalks that are considered edible. So the outer stuff is more for protection of that inner stalk and not that edible. So that's step number one, is to just use that inner stalk. And then, unfortunately, as far as actually how to make them, that stuff I'd have to look up because I've never cooked it. I've never used it. But I think that you usually like boil it or steam it and then eat it with like sauces on it. And I think it's kind of a from Spain or Mediterranean influences and stuff where they
eat it.
Okay, sure. And so I think it's kind of people use it in soups or people boil or steam that center stalk and then put various sauces over it and eat it as a side dish vegetable kind of a thing. But unfortunately, I've never grown it and I've never eaten it.
I've had it actually as those inner, very young when they're tender, and then with Parmesan, some grated Parmesan cheese, and just actually sauteed and then Parmesan cheese on the top, and that was very good.
And quite honestly, butter and Parmesan cheese, how can you go wrong? That tastes good on everything, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the way I've had it, and I've always really liked it, to be honest, when it's done that way. But I've never done it, prepared it myself, but I had friends, Italian friends, do it, prepare it, and they kind of do it every spring. So there we go.
Something new.
Yeah, and you know, I would go online too, Paul, and just type in recipes for cardoon, and I bet there's going to be several popping up. Be worth a look anyway. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Patty in Eden has a comment, so let's go there. Hi, Patty.
Hi. I just wanted to give you my experience with both iris and Hoya plant.
Yeah.
For the iris, I have dug out huge clumps because they get huge. And then I planted a few, and then the rest I put on my compost pile. And lo and behold, next spring, they just started growing on the compost pile.
I've had that happen, too.
Well, they're not that. I mean, you can pretty much do anything to most of your iris if they're that old-fashioned bearded iris. And for the Hoya, I've got one that's about 12 years old, and I found that if you cut it back, you're going to be cutting off where the blooms want to come if you like those beautiful aroma blooms that come off of those.
Yep, you would be cutting off that to begin with, but over time it will, after some growth, then you'll be getting flowers again.
Yeah, it does take quite a while, though. They like to be pot-bound.
They're not, you're right, they do like to be pot-bound. They don't like a lot of fuss. They're relatively slow-growing plants.
Yep.
And they can kind of sit in a well-lit corner and collect dust for years.
That's what they like to do, exactly.
Yep.
Thanks, Patty.
You're welcome.
Yeah, appreciate it. And Marie in Pewaukee has some more on cardoons. Hi, Marie.
Hi, I heard you talking about it. I hope I'm not too late. I'm 100% Italian.
Mm-hmm.
We eat it every spring.
Yep.
And the way we make it is when they're very tender in the spring, you go and pick them. Then they're boiled and they're till they're tender. And then you take them out and drain them and pat them dry. Put them in egg and then seasoned breadcrumbs and with it's seasoned with Parmesan and parsley and just all those good things. And then they're just sauteed in olive oil until they're nice and crispy, and they're just eaten that way.
Yeah, you know, I've never seen them prepared, but I'm sure that's exactly the way my friend had prepared them. But I missed out on the boiling. The water part I missed out on, but the rest you're exactly right.
Well, it's my Sicilian grandmother's recipe.
Yeah, yeah, it sounds exactly the way I've had it.
And okay. And what's great about this is now next year there's going to be a lot of orders from Wisconsin to the seed catalogs for cardoon seeds because
they're really good.
They're a weed. They're burdock, basically.
Burdock.
Mm-hmm.
My friend had always just gone out and picked burdock.
Right.
When that's okay. Just as it's coming up.
So I can't believe that. That's why I was surprised when people said they were going to plant it, because you can just walk in places that dogs don't go and pick your own.
Yeah, you can do that. But if you don't really have a place to go and walk, or you know, you can still plant it as our previous caller did. But that's the exact way to prepare it.
And to be exact, they are burdock. Our weed burdock and cardoon are not the same plant. They are a whole different genus.
Right.
But you can use the burdock roots in a similar way.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Marie, thanks a lot for straightening me out. I was close, but no cigar on the final, and you hit it exactly right. So thank you so much.
But it is something to think about, Larry, that we grow the same plants in our gardens, of course, tomatoes and cucumbers and carrots and stuff every year. But I'm really a proponent for suggesting that everybody try something totally different every year. Try one new thing, and maybe this year it's cardoon, or maybe it's the Mexican gherkins or something new. When you look through those catalogs or when you're browsing the seed packages in the store, try something different. You never know. Just take one little space in your garden, try something different, and it might be the start of something that you'll want to grow every year, and have fun with it. Gardening should be fun.
Yeah. Have you done Brussels sprouts and straw bales?
I have not done them in straw bales.
I was thinking about experimenting with that next year.
And there's no reason they shouldn't do well. The only challenge is some people have great success with straw bales and some people have great failures with straw bales. And one of the biggest challenges with straw bales is fertility, because all that straw as it's breaking down, you need a lot of fertilizer to balance that out. And with Brussels sprouts being such a long season before you harvest them, that straw bale starts to really break down a lot by the time you're getting to the harvest season. So you would have to really, really be careful that you're making sure that there's enough nitrogen, especially fertility, in that all the way through the growing season. So that would be my challenge. Plus, the plants get pretty top heavy. So they can be very large and top heavy by the end of the season, and that might be a bit of an issue as well.
I was thinking of using tomato cages.
Mm-hmm. To keep them.
I've had such good luck with straw bales that I thought, well, you know what? I'm going to just for fun try one bale.
There you go. Just for fun. Give it a shot.
Chris in Wisconsin Dells, your turn. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Instead of throwing your perennials on the compost heap, if you're in the Madison area, attorney Don Becker, who's a disability attorney, has a sale at his house every Mother's Day. Put them in your basement and let them dry out and donate them to his sale, because he donates the proceeds from the sale to the homeless shelter.
Oh.
So, yeah, so it's a really good thing to do, like instead of putting them on your compost heap, because you can put lots of things on your compost heap.
That's right. Thank you, Chris. Does he have probably a Facebook page or something?
I don't know, but he's the big disability attorney in Madison, and he's a wonderful person, and he got me my disability, and he's just a great guy. So
his name again is?
Is Don Becker.
Oh, Don Becker, okay.
Yeah, he's the one that's on TV all the time, and he's a really wonderful person, and it would just be a nice thing to do. The sale is always the Saturday of Mother's Day weekend,
mm-hmm.
And so people could just be putting their stuff away for the fall, or not digging it up and dig it up in spring and just donating it to the sale. That would be a good thing.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Always, you know, gardeners are always trying to do good things anyway, and so that sounds like another worthy, very worthy thing to do. And thanks again. You can join in, too. We have open lines, finally, at 1-800-642-1234. Buzz sent us a photo on Facebook, and it's a nice photo of a lot of beets. He's harvesting the last gift from the garden before the snow, borscht soup and snowstorm. Mmm.
And beets are, and any of the root crops, that's one of them that you can mulch over. If you go ahead and put, you know, 12 inches of straw over them, you can be spreading, you know, digging through that straw and digging out some of those root crops late into the season, all the way into December and beyond even. So, that is a beautiful picture. I just looked that up of quite a nice beet crop. And there's even greens on there that he can eat the greens first and then the roots.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for sending that, Buzz. Always fun to see. Did you see the photo just below it of the Brussels sprouts? Look at there from Maryland. We were talking about that earlier. It's a wonderful shot. Mark sent us a Facebook question as well. He says, I grew mint in a large pot for the first year. How can I store it? How do I store it for it to come back? Or should I cut the stems down? What should I do?
So mint and some of these herbs, mint is actually hardy. It can live outside, and it's good that you put it in a pot because it also can really spread over everything. So you want to put it in a place that where the roots are restricted from not spreading. So you have a couple of options. If you just want to save it for next year, you can dig a hole and set that container in the ground and then just let it overwinter as if it were growing right in the ground. You can take it in the house, but you're not likely going to get, you'll be able to harvest it off of it for a while. If you can put it in a really, really bright place, give it extra light, that will extend its season. And then if you can limp it along until summer and then trim it back really well in summer before it goes back outside, you can keep the plant going that way as well. It is a perennial. It does kind of want to do a little bit of going dormant over the winter a little bit, so it'll kind of slow down, shut down in the short days. But if you can limp it through indoors, then trim it back, put it outside in the spring, and it'll take right off.
JJ in an email wonders if you have any suggestions for planting butterfly weed seeds from an existing plant, wants to plant it to locations around the yard or around the countryside.
Okay, so butterfly weed is Buddleia, and that is one of those that is marginally hardy up here and doesn't make it through winters a lot of times. So the seed, I'd have to look up if the seed needs any kind of special treatment. So a lot of seeds will need to have cold treatment, cold stratification before they'll germinate. And I'm not 100% sure on Buddleia if that needs it. So we'd have to look that one up. But if they do, what you could do is collect the seeds now and then put them in a tin or something else that's rodent proof and then just set that tin outside and in a shady spot, like an east or north side of the building sort of a thing, so that the tin won't like absorb a lot of heat during the warmer afternoon days and stuff. And then it'll get the cold treatment just like it would if they were outside. And then you can plant them in the spring. But again, I'm not 100% sure what the requirements are for Buddleia seed as far as any kind of special treatments that they need before you plant them out. They may not need cold because they are not a cold season plant. I know they're, down South Carolina and stuff is a real common place for them. So they may not need that cold at all. But quite honestly, I'd have to look up what the seed requirements are for Buddleia and see mm-hmm. if it needs any kind of special treatment before you seed them.
Mary in Fond du Lac has a question. Let's go there to Mary. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. Yes, it's not necessarily a question, just an observation and a comment. I, received a poinsettia 4 years ago at Christmas time, and it's still blooming. And I'm just always amazed that it looks as though it's going to die away, but then all of a sudden it leafs up again, and it's just a beautiful poinsettia. So for all of us that throw poinsettias away at Christmas time, and I didn't know if you had any insight into,
Do you put it outside during the summer and then bring it in?
No, it's just always in the same window and inside, and it's in a north-facing window. Okay. I don't water it a whole lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
It just keeps coming back.
So it has the green leaves, and then do you get the red color?
And this one is a white one, so I get the white color.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if anybody else had that experience also, but
well, some of the newer varieties are a lot better about that, aren't they?
They are. And when you say that you have it in a north window, what's probably happening is you're getting some cold coming through that glass, and that's maybe helping trigger it. So it's like with Christmas cactus. They are triggered to set bloom by day length as well as by cold. And so typically we have them near windows, and when we start getting cold nights in October, that cools it off near the glass, and that triggers them to bloom. So there's probably some combination of light and temperature that's going on with your poinsettia that it's doing that. Because it's really surprising, though, that you're getting the white coloring, because normally we have to give them some dark treatment in order to trigger them to flower. But now in this window, is it a room that's not used at night and is kind of dark?
It's a living room, so it's used. It is used, and it's not up next to the window. It's kind of lower to the window. But what good information, you know, that that a cold blast might be making a difference too. Okay.
And
all right.
I wish I knew the poinsettia, the type of variety that you had.
and most poinsettias are propagated by cuttings, which means there are others like it out there that it would be interesting if they're doing the same things. But one way or another, you're providing it accidentally, maybe, with just the right conditions that it likes that's triggering it. But that is unusual that it's actually getting the color without going through a dormant dark period or that long nights kinds of things that we typically have to do to trigger flowering or the coloring.
And the coloring. And you're exactly right. It's sitting right next to my Christmas cactus, which is in full bloom now. So
Perfect.
It's all good. Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Mary, for calling.
My Christmas cactus this year was blooming at the beginning of October, so it's really goofed up this year. It's really early for it, but
I had one that sort of more or less bloomed all year. I
mean, really?
I never watered it, and it was in kind of a cool place, and it just always bloomed.
And, you know, there are Christmas cactuses, and there are Thanksgiving cactuses, and, again, they bloom in response to environmental conditions of day length and temperature and moisture, and they've just been bred to bloom longer, and so the old-fashioned schedule just doesn't apply anymore.
The Mary in La Crosse has a potted garlic that sits on the patio. Should she bring it in now?
Yes, probably, because and this next week it's going to be really cold temperatures at night, and so even though they can take some frost and light freezes, when it gets down into the teens, that's going to freeze it solid. So I would definitely bring it in now.
And iris roots, Marilyn has some iris roots that need to overwinter. Could she put them in a big pot and put the pot in the garage?
Yes. What you would want to do is kind of treat them just like any of the summer bulbs, like dahlias and gladiolas and things like that. So you can put them in like peat moss or sand or something, or pretty dry potting soil, and keep them dormant. So you want to keep them temperatures like below 50 or below 55, ideally. You have to be careful in a garage because sometimes it can get warm in there, and sometimes it can get too cold. So if it freezes down to, you know, 10 degrees in there or something, that's in a pot, that's going to be too cold for them. So you want them to, it's kind of that old-fashioned root cellar conditions that we want. And then look at anything that you're storing over summer or over winter like this. Look at them every month and see if they're molding, bring them out and dry them out a little bit more. If they look like they're getting shrivelly, then get a couple pieces of newspaper, get it wet, and put it in there with it to raise the humidity a little bit.
And there we are, out of time, Diana. Thank you so much. Diana Alfeth, our guest, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Pierce County. Always great to have her with us, and always great to have you listening in. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.